This is OTB AM.
This Liverpool team are going to coast to a league title. Fair enough, that's a great achievement. But that Man United team were an all-time great because they weren't playing very well early in the season.
Does Everton have to happen in the same period of time though? Did Liverpool not have those elements of that team?
They have to win the Champions League. They have to win the Champions League this year. But not if they're... To equal Manchester United's treble season, they have to win at least the Champions League in the league, right? And you could say that by not winning a cup, if they don't win a cup, then they're not... It's not as good a season. Man United are always going to be able to say, we won a treble. Did you win a treble? No.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7.30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Pepsi Max. Proud sponsor of the UEFA Champions League. For the love of it.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Let's turn our attention to a wild weekend in the Premier League, and I'm delighted to say Mark Lawrenson is with us this morning. Mark, good morning to you.
Morning. I think every weekend's been wild, hasn't it?
It has. It really has.
Mad.
Aston Villa are the only team in the top five leagues in Europe with a 100% record. That is wild.
That is wild. And also, I mean, when you looked at that game yesterday and look at nearly all the other games every weekend, the amount of goals that are scored has been amazing. And I would still maintain, I mean, I did quite a few games in terms of commentary towards the end of last season in the lockdown, and they are still, whichever way you look at them, they are still glorified friendlies where the players generally are not under anything like the pressure that they would be with supporters, obviously.
I think that's having a massive impact, and it's having an impact on in different ways on different teams and in different ways on different players. But if you were to say there's any kind of trend, it's that players who previously might have been suffering from boos or exasperation are suddenly willing to take risks and playing a little bit better than they might have done when the crowd was getting on them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're playing with freedom. And, you know, the other thing as well is that we should throw in, the referees are letting the games go, which is even better. So, and probably, I don't do any of the stats, they drive me mad, but I think it seems to me like the ball's in play a lot more than it used to be as well. But, yeah, I think if you are a passing midfield player who's prepared to take risks trying to play somebody through in terms of for a chance at goal, I think your life's completely different. It's like just keep trying to do exactly that, and if it gets cut out, it gets cut out, and you haven't got 50,000 people going, oh my god, not again, you keep giving the ball away. So, and I think strikers as well are not frightened to miss anymore. So in many ways, it's really, really good. But of course, it is just not the same, unfortunately.
No, it really isn't. Let's talk about the big story that has emerged since the Everton game. And that is that, as everybody feared when the injury happened, that Virgil van Dijk has had ACL damage. And look, the contact ACLs, they can be worse than the non-contact ones, just because there's also extra damage done and it takes a little bit longer for the swelling to come down, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's terrible for him, given how well he's playing. And I know the Liverpool fans were like, oh, it's terrible for us. But it's terrible for him, because he was literally cresting to be one of the best players in the world over the last 18 months.
If he wasn't already, probably the best defender in the world. I can't really think of anybody else that would really kind of be up there with him. So, you know, and the thing about the guy is not only is an outstanding player, but also the effect he has on people around him. I mean, he probably played with four, I think, if not five, other Liverpool players alongside him in central defence, including Fabinho, etc. And he just made the whole thing look so easy. He made them look great. The game so easy, everything about him defensively, but his passing, his threat at the other end in terms of scoring goals from set pieces, etc. And, you know, when Henderson wasn't playing also, he's been a very, very good leader. It's a tough one. And I think the problem for the club at the moment is not so much the replacement. It's just when they can get him to have the operation, because, as you rightly say, you know, all the swelling and the soreness really has got to go before you can go under the knife. So, I don't know, you're looking at it, and I would probably be surprised if he's actually back by the end of the season, because they say about, you know, 6, 7, 8 months, but then he's got to get fit. So it's almost a write-off for Liverpool, which is a massive problem for them.
What's the medium-term fix here, Mark? Obviously, Fabinho goes straight into defence. Is it alongside Joe Gomez? Is that your new partnership at the heart of defence? And do they need to invest in January?
Well, I thought Matic was quite good at the weekend. So, yeah. You know, he might have to go, Klopp, this is, might have to go Matip and Gomez. I think the problem with Joe Gomez a little bit is that Trent Alexander-Arnold obviously loves to get forward all the time. And I think, you know, Gomez is still relatively inexperienced. And it's when Trent goes forward, is a little bit with Joe Gomez, it's kind of, he gets pulled out a little bit. So, but I'd go with him, you know, because Gomez and obviously Van Dijk was very, very good. Gomez just hasn't started the season well, but neither's Trent. So, there's just that little bit of a weakness. But I think I would just go with it because Fabinho can go in and play there. But long term, it's like if you're a player and can play in many different positions, but you don't necessarily like some of the positions. So we have three or four games and it's all good. And then you suddenly think, you know what, I want to go back to play where I used to play. So I'd be more inclined to go Gomez and Matip. And generally, you know, the thing about central defenders, the good ones, the glass is always half empty rather than half full. So what I mean is that you're always waiting for danger, expecting danger all the time. And Fabinho in there probably is not really like that.
Yeah, is there an argument to be made that, I guess, given the transfer window that went by without having bought a central defender, you could skew that in a different way to say, well, at least they bolstered in midfield, and Fabinho's absence in midfield would be less keenly felt than Virgil van Dijk's absence in defence, and yeah, that could prompt the move back.
Yeah, quite possibly. But then, you know, you're going to... So the other thing which Van Dijk gives you, and obviously it's a taken that he's not going to be playing, but is that physical and aerial presence as well, which you have to have. Fabinho can't give you that. And can Fabinho, yes, he can play in there in terms of with the ball at his feet because he's good and he'll be able to read the play, etc. But will he be able to organise people around him? Will he be able to say to Gomez, come on, get in a bit tighter to me, and occasionally say to Trent Alexander-Arnold, no, sit in here a minute because they're playing with a left-sided midfield player. So it's a difficult one. I mean, and then, you know, and I didn't really answer your other question in terms of what do they look for in January, but I would think in January they would go and buy another central defender, and whether that's too late in terms of the results in trying to win the league for the rest of the season remains to be seen, really.
Look, Jordan Pickford, obviously, the tackle should have been a red card.
Yes.
Should any retrospective action, should he get a red card retrospectively?
No, I just, no. I don't necessarily kind of believe in that. It should just have been a red card. And how it wasn't is probably the worst thing of all of it as well. I mean, that is a great problem. If you think about that, if you'd seen that, say, in the middle of the park, the referee would have been straight away red, gone. But he couldn't have got his card out quick enough. So, just a really, really strange decision by the officials. And one, I'm going to say that they missed, but how can they possibly miss it? I mean, that's the worst thing. But look, it's gone. So I don't necessarily believe in the kind of, you know, with the aftermath, well, yeah, it's a red. We're going to give him a red card. You missed it, and that's just the way that it is.
The response from Liverpool to the 7-2 against Villa was good enough, I think, for everybody to go. The 7-2 was just a complete freak result, as opposed to something terminal.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about the 7-2 is obviously, well, let's start with the goalkeeper. To be honest with you, I mean, for me. Adrian, he couldn't keep bees, so he couldn't. He's not a goalkeeper for me. He's just not good enough. But then you have that problem where, you know, who would you attract with lots of experience to be a number two at a football club? Because if you're kind of, you know, a good goalkeeper, you don't want to be number two if you're going to Liverpool, because you know you're never going to play unless Alisson's fit. So that therein lies the problem. And also, when you know your goalkeeper's not great, you play a little bit different and you start to look a little bit nervous because you're thinking, what's he going to do? So that's the big issue. And I think, in fairness to Aston Villa and Grealish, they did a great job on Trent Alexander-Arnold. So, you know, where, just the way that Grealish played, and he was bringing not only Trent over to him, but also Gomez as well. And there was great big holes appearing. So it was a good response. It remains to be seen, you know, what happens going forward for them and what Klopp wants to do in terms of, you know, as we discuss, is it Fabinho with Matip, is it with Gomez or whatever it is?
Everton are still top of the table after the draw, and yeah, they were pretty fortunate with the offside decision at the end. How, in this weird season, is there any possibility that they could actually be title contenders, do you think?
Yeah, I think there is a possibility. I really seriously do. I mean, you know, they look great across midfield. There's any doubt about that whatsoever. And the acquisitions that Ancelotti has made have made them into a really good side. They've got momentum at the moment. You know, Calvert-Lewin scoring goals for fun, etc. But it's, you know, we know it's the old long, hard season, etc., etc. But they will be a force. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. It's just whether, over the course of the season, defensively, they're going to have enough. You know, I think if you're going to really have be a threat in terms of trying to win the Premier League, you've got to, obviously you've not got to, but you have a lot of days where you don't maybe play particularly well, but your defence does, and they keep a clean sheet, which gives you a chance of pinching a goal at the other end. And I'm not certain whether Everton have got that at the moment.
There were only two clean sheets all weekend, and one was Man City, the other was Aston Villa. It's really important for Manchester City to, again, also show that they're capable of bouncing back from recent defeats. And against an Arsenal side who did have a lot of hype around them coming into the game, and against a manager who knew Manchester City so well, with the injury to Virgil, are Manchester City now automatic favourites for the title, or what do you think?
Yeah, but only just. I think that is the proviso, only just, because we still, you know, Arsenal could have got a draw there. I don't think there's any argument about that whatsoever. So there's still that little thing with City defensively. Look, we know on the day they'll beat teams 3-4 and 5-0. De Bruyne are obviously available, etc. But again, it's really, you know, just put you back to my answer in terms of with Everton, that City, I mean, they lost 9 games last year, which is almost unheard of. And they still look at the moment as though they are capable of losing games. But there's no doubt it would be. It's like if De Bruyne is out for the season, Liverpool hear that, they think, wow, we've got, you know, an even better chance now of winning the league. So probably the answer is yes.
When Spurs were 3-0 up, a lot of people were going, wow, Spurs are amazing. Look at that front trio. And they still have Bale to come off the bench.
Yeah.
And then it finishes 3-3. And we're like, oh, they're a little bit Spursy.
Oh, they're all Spursy. They're always Spursy. And it's a bit like, you know, it's like, it's, you always think with Spurs, eventually, they will let you down. And Arsenal have been like that in the last 2 or 3 years. And maybe they're not going to be like that with Arteta. But Spurs most definitely will let you down. And, you know, it's interesting. I watched, obviously, the game. I missed the last half hour for a very valid reason. But at half-time, I mean, Mourinho walks on the pitch and he walks off with Harry and it's all fine and it's absolutely fabulous. And I'd love to have heard what he said at the end of the game. I mean, it would not have been his fault, would he, if that were 100% certain?
No,
that's for sure. Like, you're trying to pinpoint weaknesses where, you know, the Spurs team wouldn't be able to contend, because I guess for 60 minutes yesterday everybody had Tottenham down as title contenders. It comes back to that vital position of the central areas of defence. Like, even when Gareth Bale came on, I mean, he should have scored. Harry Kane should have put them 4-0 up before that. They should have been 5-0 up before those closing stages. It just goes to show that if your central defence is in any bit leaky, you cannot mount a title challenge.
No, well, that's the point I'm trying to make, which is you know, that, you know, I can only talk about when I played in terms of the football, but we knew that if you know, myself and Hansen and the rest of the lads, if we did keep a clean sheet, that Dalglish or Rush would score, you know, because they hardly needed any opportunities to do so, and it makes a massive difference, and I don't care who you are. I mean, you look at West Ham, they were all over the place. David Moyes is a big friend of mine, and I texted him after the game and stuff. But, you know, they're all over the place, and he was tearing his hair out. But the thing is that, you know, that they came back from it. That's the thing. I mean, 3-0 up at home, clubs like Tottenham should go on and win 5-0, and that's the real worry is, well, why can't you do that? As you rightly pinpointed, that, you know, defensively, they look shaky as soon as they concede.
What did Moyes say back in the text?
I can't possibly tell you. There was one or two Fs in it and other stuff.
he said he could have done a Jose Mourinho knee slide yesterday. He was so happy. It was remarkable. And also, there's a lot of questions about what Kevin Nolan has in his notebook, whatever he was showing to Manuel Lanzini yesterday. People saying that it could fix all the ills of 2020, given the transformation and fortunes for West Ham, whatever Kevin Nolan showed him.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. What I can say that in terms with Moyes is that he quite likes the team that he's got. That's the first time he said when he looks at his team, he says and he knows, you know, when they play well, they can be a problem for anyone. But I suppose after 16 minutes yesterday, he was like, really? He'd probably think he wasn't going to be in a job at like 7 o'clock at night, but. He likes it, and I, you know, obviously he's my mate, but he's a decent man. But he has in the last few years ended up with a sense of humour, probably because, you know, being at Manchester United and then being at West Ham has made him see it a little bit differently.
One last question, then. The issues that Spurs have, are they the same? Would you diagnose Chelsea with the same issues to the point where they're not realistic title contenders because they are just absolutely leaking like a sieve at the moment?
Yeah. That's it. That's probably the best answer I can give you is just, yes, I don't think he knows his best team at the moment, Frank Lampard. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's just, it'll be a balanced thing for them. They look fabulous going forward. You know, the signings look really, really good players in terms of, you know, from midfield going forward. But defensively, absolutely all over the place. And they just, you know, there's one thing, you can be maybe not particularly good defensively in terms of your ability of players, but you can be organised and you can make it very, very difficult for teams, but Chelsea just can't seem to do it at all.
No, they're definitely lacking organisation at the moment. Yeah. Mark, great having you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
Pleasure.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Pepsi Max, proud sponsor of the UEFA Champions League. For the love of it.